A personal computer can rarely be pushed as hard as when you use one of the latest and greatest computer games. The computing game industry pulled in more money last year, as Sean just mentioned, than the movie industry. We are talking massive entertainment. The Game Developers Conference held last week in San Jose is the official trade event by game developers for developers of computer, console, mobile, arcade, online games, and location-based entertainment. It's the forum where programmers, artists, producers, game designers, audio professionals, and others involved in the development of interactive games gather to exchange ideas, network, and shape the future of the industry. Every year, the GDC features over 300 lectures, panels, tutorials, and roundtable discussions of a comprehensive selection of game development topics taught by leading industry experts. In addition, the GDC Expo showcases all of the game's development tools, platforms, and services. The conference included the fourth annual Independent Games Festival, where new unpublished games compete for attention by the publishing community. Sean Cleveland, one of our regular geeks, is formal technical editor at Boot Magazine and Maximum PC Magazine. He does freelance writing for trade papers, magazines, and online sites like Amazon.com. Sean has years of experience in press relations and product marketing and can make his way around any computer conference floor. Sean Cleveland, our very own geek, went to the Game Developers Conference last week and did interviews with the movers and shakers of the game industry. Sean, thanks for doing that for us.
Oh, yeah, it was fun. It's good to be back as a press person again.
I guess. Sean, the GDC, as the name implies, is the trade show not for the in-game player, but for the developers of games. Is that apparent from the look and feel of the conference floor?
Yeah, very apparent. If you're an end user, if you're a consumer gamer going to Game Developers Conference to see some cool new games, you probably would have been pretty let down. Most of the companies there were either showing off new hardware that developers can make games for, new software that they can use to develop games, it really runs the gamut. If you want to see what the latest games are, you would go to E3, which is the Electronic Entertainment Expo in LA every year, and that's the largest in the world. That's where you see the latest cutting edge games, the stuff that's going to come out.
And that's where you see the teenagers.
That's where you see the teenagers, right. Okay. And that's actually only open up to the industry for the first day or two and before they open it up to the public. Because they want the press to get in, that sort of thing.
Sure.
But the Game Developers Conference in San Jose is the place to go if you're a developer of games, if you want to be a developer of games. Because actually the manufacturers, the publishers of games, developers, I mean, all the studios, they have little booths set up and they were taking resumes. And there were a lot of people there talking. Saw a lot of papers going back and forth. It's pretty interesting. That's the place to go if you want to break in the business, that's for sure.
Now, you, not just game developers and like computer, but we also talked about mobile and, well, lots of different kind of arenas, console games, mobile. So tell us a little bit about what you saw in like the small personal type.
Yeah, it was really interesting. I didn't get to catch the mobile part of the show. That actually happened on Wednesday, and I was there last Thursday, I think it was the 5th. So I wish I could have seen more of what was going on. But, of course, Nokia had a big display there.
Now, Nokia is basically known for phones, cell phones.
Yeah.
So why are they at a game conference?
The games are making their way down to the handheld now and down to the cell phone. And, of course, the PC is, you know, converging down to the console, the Xbox, the PlayStation 2. So that whole trend of getting smaller, lighter, you know, it's certainly happening faster than I thought it would. And Nokia's come out with this little device called the Nokia N-Gage. It's spelled N-G-A-G-E. And it's basically a mobile 3D gaming device. It's about the size of a Nintendo Game Boy Advanced. It looks very much like a controller.
But the shape of a
controller for a PlayStation 2 or Xbox, in that you would hold on to it on both ends. It's ergonomically designed. And you would play the game with your thumbs, except the screen's in the middle. But this is much, much more than just a gaming device. And I actually interviewed a representative from Nokia, and she had some interesting things to say.
The N-Gage is actually optimized for gaming. It was designed for active gamers. Really, that's who our target market is. People who like to play games, they're into games, they grew up with games, they own devices and consoles today. So this is our first entrance into this new gaming category. It is much more than a gaming device. In addition to it being optimized for gaming, the thing that differentiates it from the mobile gaming devices that are on the market today is it features multiplayer gaming. So you can play with your friends or your family locally via Bluetooth, or you can play with your friends across the globe via GPRS over the GSM network. It is a tri-band GSM phone, so it features 900, 1800, and 1900 GSM technology. In addition to that, it is a phone. It is all of the quality that you've come to expect from Nokia. In addition to that, it also has an integrated MP3 player, so you can listen to your music on this device as well. And it also has an integrated FM radio, where you can tune in to different radio stations that you want to listen to.
This phone sounds like it has everything.
Oh, it was so amazing.
Did you play with it?
Oh, they had a bunch of them set up, and yeah, I played with it. It's pretty neat.
I think John and I are both in the, when can we get it?
Yeah.
So when can we get it?
I mean, this thing has everything. I was really impressed. It's even got a stereo in if you want to record data. It's got 64 megs of onboard memory that you can upgrade. You know, like you said, it's a FM stereo.
Does it have a date book or calendar?
Yes, it's got your basic contact PDA features. You can dial, you know, based on your entry in there instead of typing a number in, just like you would from a Palm phone.
It's got USB ports and 802, I'm sorry, and Bluetooth.
Yeah, Bluetooth. And they say with Bluetooth that you can game within 30 feet of each other. I don't know. I think Bluetooth is maybe not that well.
Next to each other.
Yeah, you know, it really depends on their implementation of it. But that's pretty neat. And if you wanted to, you could actually game across the country.
So when can we get one?
Well, it sounds like it's not going to be out until the fourth quarter of this year, in time for the holidays. They wouldn't give me a price. They say it pretty much depends on market conditions and competitors. But they are targeting mass market volumes. They've announced 14 titles, game titles, for this thing. And they're hoping to have 20, 25 titles at launch time. And some of those include kart racing, Major League Baseball, MotoGT, which is a motorcycle racing game, Red Faction, first-person shooter,
wow,
Sonic N, Super Space Invaders, Tomb Raider. I mean, the list goes on.
Lots of games. And it also has, like, direct email supports, like IMAP 4 and POP 3 support. So you don't, you can just log into your normal email with it.
Yes.
Okay, this thing's great. It's finally one of those things we want, you know.
And the screen is amazing. It's color. It's high res, actually, I think, for a little device like this. And it's fun to play games on.
Was it easy to view the information on the screen?
Oh, yeah, very easy.
Did you look at text at all?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I'm putting together a story for geekspeak.org. You should see that early next week, and there'll be pictures up there and links if you want to get more information.
Great. Now, then you went and spoke with, outside the mobile arena, you went and started speaking with the video card manufacturers. Tell us who the video card manufacturers are.
Well, the two biggest manufacturers are ATI and NVIDIA. ATI is located in Canada. NVIDIA is located just over the hill in Santa Clara. And they are the two largest manufacturers of video cards for your personal computer, and they do mobile as well. I started with ATI, and I spoke with Andrew Thompson, who is the Director of Advanced Technology Marketing, and he gave me the lowdown on what they're releasing.
Here at GDC, it's a huge announcement for us. We have three new products. There's sort of three tiers of product in our PC gaming products or consumer products, so there's a high-end enthusiast. And just yesterday, we announced the Radeon 9800 Pro or 9800 family, which includes 9800, 9800 Pro. There's a high-volume mainstream product that's the 9600 family and 9600 Pro. And then there's the low-end value product, which is the 9200 family. So it's essentially a new refresh from top to bottom from us. So our complete desktop line is refreshed. The 9800 family and 9600 family are new DirectX 9 performance products, and then a DirectX 8.1 and the 9200 family in the low-end.
So they're releasing a whole bunch of stuff. That was hard to keep track of, I got to say. He really knew his stuff. Let's get back to that interview, more of that interview, in just a moment. You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxell. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and Miles Elam. We've been talking about the game industry. If you would like to join our discussion, I'm going to wait to request you to call in until a little bit later because we got a lot of more content from the GDC. This is Central Coast Public Radio. This program is supported by a grant from Cruise.io, providing internet service, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruzio.com, that's cruzio.com, or by calling 459-6301.
This is Sean Cleveland bringing you today's Geek Bit. Serial ATA, the latest hard drive connection technology, is an evolutionary replacement for the parallel ATA interface, which is also referred to as IDE. Unlike USB and FireWire connectors, serial ATA is planned to be the primary storage interface inside the PC system. Serial ATA is completely compatible with today's software while providing many architectural enhancements, using thinner wires that connect to only 4 pins rather than the wider cables used today. Serial ATA wires are easier to route inside a computer and provide better airflow around parts. Lower voltage requirements of the serial ATA interface also allow for cables that can now be up to a meter in length. Currently, the parallel ATA specification supports bus speeds of 133 megabytes per second using Quantum Technologies Ultra ATA 133 standard. This is not much slower than the 150 megabyte per second speeds promised by serial ATA. However, it was questionable whether the Ultra ATA 133 specification could make the jump to 266 megabytes per second due to the electrical limits of its parallel architecture. Future bus speed increases of the serial ATA specification are not in question. Expect to see serial ATA 2 supporting speeds of 300 megabytes per second and then doubling again to 600 megabytes per second with serial ATA 3. When discussing hard drive speeds, keep in mind that bus speeds and drive speeds are very different. When hard drives are advertised with speeds of 60, 100, or even 133 megabytes per second, manufacturers are talking about the maximum potential of the connector architecture. These speeds are the aggregate throughput of the bus, or the total amount of information that can be pumped through the physical wire. You will not actually see hard drives that can really transfer at these very high speeds for quite some time. While serial ATA drives are slow to surface, more and more motherboard manufacturers are including the new fangled connector in their designs. But don't worry about losing the older parallel ATA connectors anytime soon, as they will still be around for quite some time before being phased out. Competitive desktop pricing will hopefully make serial ATA hard drives and its architecture a widespread reality in the meantime. This Geek Bit is brought to you by the Geeks of GeekSpeak. Join us for GeekSpeak Friday mornings at 9 a.m. here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP.
And you are listening to KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio. We are talking with Sean Cleveland, who went to the GDC, the Game Developers Conference, last week, about the game developing industry and what different people are doing in the industry. We just heard an interview from... Oh, who was that?
That was Andrew Thompson from ATI.
Okay. And he mentioned a whole product line. Can you spit through those real quick again?
Yeah. Basically, the Radeon is their chip, or is their family of products. And so they released the Radeon 9800 family for the high end. The mid end to high volume, what they call it, is the Radeon 9600. And the low value end is the Radeon 9200. Now, these cards, the important thing is they support what's called DirectX. DirectX is a technology invented by Microsoft to basically burrow through the OS so that games can actually have access to hardware directly. Otherwise, you'd have to deal with all the resources that Windows is running in the background, and games would crawl. So with different versions of DirectX, newer special effects and gaming technologies are being opened up, basically to make the game more realistic. Everybody's shooting for the Toy Story look for video games. That's where they all want to get to. So, and they're getting closer and closer. And with DirectX, as we will hear from ATI, DirectX 9, I should say, a lot has been going on, and games are really, really going to look and feel a lot better moving forward.
What's new in DirectX 9?
Well, actually, we asked Andrew, and this is what he told us.
So probably the one biggest feature that's in DirectX 9 over everything we've had before is floating point. So in your generic processor from Intel or AMD, everything's been floating point for years. Graphics chips are just moving in this generation to floating point for the first time. And so the types of things that lets you do, if you think about lighting, and you think if you see a traditional photograph where sometimes things look very bright in a scene or very dark in a scene, as recently as last year, we couldn't do that in a graphics chip. Everything would just be all blurred out or faded out into the just dark mush, so you didn't have any clarity in that. So we can do what we call high dynamic range lighting, which is very bright objects, very dark objects, and you still maintain the level of detail in the things that you're looking at. So there's a feature aspect like that, and then of course there's the performance that comes along with that. So in the past, if you wanted high performance in your game applications, for the most part, you ran at maybe 1024 by 768. You turned most of your features down so that you got very high interactive frame rates. In this generation, the raw performance is just so high that we say you can run at 16 by 12 if you want. You can turn all the features up. A big thing on image quality is full scene anti-aliasing, so that you're sampling each pixel on the screen multiple times at different places so that you get a better quality looking pixel in the end. And so we're pushing very hard on either 2x, 4x, or 6x anti-aliasing. There's a performance impact to that, but it's a very small percentage, and the raw performance of the hardware is just so high that people should use it all the time. So image quality is a huge deal, as well as the new features that come.
Sean, one of the main things he mentioned, Andrew mentioned, is anti-aliasing, that the new chip handles the full screen anti-aliasing. What is anti-aliasing for the layman?
Well, anti-aliasing is not new. Actually, last generation cards had them too, the GeForce 4 and the Radeon 9700. But what it is when you actually look at the screen, if you look very closely at the diagonal lines that make up, inside games, pretty much everything that's happening, you'll notice that they look jagged. Now, if you're at a higher resolution, they don't look quite so jagged, but they're still there. And it does affect the look of the game, because a pixel is square in nature. So when you line a bunch of squares up, you've got the corners sticking out, and you can see those. And what anti-aliasing does is it smooths those lines to make the picture look better. And another technology that he talked about in DirectX 9 is floating point. Really quick, floating point is the messy math. Whenever you have to do fractions, you have to move a decimal point, that's where the processor, both your main processor and the graphics processor, that's what they have to work hardest on. And anything 3D related is going to be floating point intensive. Other type of math is integer type math. That's the nice math that you see with whole numbers. That's much, much, much easier to do. But it's the floating point. And what's happening is this generation is moving the floating point from the processor onto the graphics chip. So, you know, less lag, more power.
And they said that one of the features that because of that, he said that we'd be able to handle in games dark areas actually still having a lot of detail, as long with light areas having a lot of detail.
Right. You're going to see dynamic lighting. It's just going to look amazing, much, much more realistic than it did before.
It seems like graphics cards are kind of becoming separate computers in themselves. They're following the same evolution. They're getting more memory. Now they're getting a floating point processor.
It's amazing. We follow Intel and AMD to see what they're doing. We talk about transistor count. And actually, ATI and NVIDIA are ahead of the game. They actually have more transistors on their graphics chips than you'll see in a Pentium or Athlon processor. And they do it in a faster time. The turnaround cycle for the graphics chip industry is about 8 months. And
compared
in the processor
to
world, you know, Moore's Law is 18. So, I mean, that's, you know, I'd say it's probably closer to 8 months to a year for graphics. But if they miss a cycle, like NVIDIA did recently, that could be big.
Yeah, and it hurts them a lot.
Yeah.
Now, of course, with this fast card development, that means that the developers are kind of, it's hard for them to develop for the new machines.
Well, that's for sure. And that's the biggest problem that game developers have, is that they'll come out with all these new technologies. DirectX is moving forward. But, you know, what does it matter? Why would you go buy a really expensive card paying top dollar when there's nothing that takes advantage of that hardware? So what they'll do is make demos that they can show the press and say, look what we can do now. That's great, but, you know, you don't want to spend $300, $400 on a card just to watch demos. So they'll seed money to game developers maybe years in advance to start working on the next generation technology games, so that when the graphics cards come out, the games hit at the same time. And there's actually stuff there, A-list titles, you know, kind of like B-movies, A-movies. Well, the A-list titles, the ones, developers who have the money and they can put it forward in this technology, they have the good engineers. They're the ones who are pushing the industry forward. And
with help from the card manufacturers,
yeah,
correct?
Correct. Now, the card manufacturers, they build tools, their own tools, to get access to these new technologies, because both companies may support DirectX 9, they both have features that the other ones don't support. So we asked, just what are these tools? with
the developers are looking for the install base of hardware, and so one of the things that we try and do is cut down on the amount of time between when they first see the hardware and when they can get games out on the shelves that use the new features. So one of the best things that we can do is give them tools to sort of speed their development process. So I actually have a whole team of engineers. We have a tool suite called RenderMonkey, which is really just for sort of rapid prototyping of shaders, and you can use it as a standalone tool just for prototyping, or you can actually integrate it into your development flow. It really is just it's a GUI that looks a lot like Visual Studio does. It's XML based, so there's just an XML database in Windows that anybody can read and write to, and so a number of developers have integrated it into their tool flow and their game development, and some are just using it for prototyping. We do that, and then we also have a staff of engineers that work sometimes even on site with developers to help them add new shader routines to their code, optimize for performance, sort of whatever it takes.
So that's the key here. The tools are used to write these shader routines. And the difference is you've got DirectX and OpenGL. They're technologies for writing games too. But these shader routines are the key to get access to the new technologies. And we asked them, just what is a shader?
Yeah, so a shader is just a tiny little program. So if you think in sort of traditional PC lingo, the shaders we've had up until now and still present are basically like assembly code on a PC. So a traditional shader might only be 10 instructions long, something like that. And as recently as a year ago, developers might have used Notepad to write that little shader. And if it didn't work, they look on the screen and they go, wow, the picture's wrong, and they would try and figure out what's going on. So we have more tools that help them write more complex shaders and debug tools, just like you have with regular code. And now we're in this transition from assembly-level type shaders to what we call high-level language shaders. And on the PC side, that would be a language like C or C++. So there's an equivalent languages that are coming in graphics for that. So in DirectX 9, there's Microsoft's HLSL, which just stands for the high-level shading language. And in OpenGL, we have a new OpenGL 2.0 rev coming, which has a GL2 shading language. So they're sort of peers in that, where developers can work at a higher level of abstraction in writing these programs. But essentially, shaders are just tiny little graphics programs that run on the graphics chip.
Now, that was Andrew Thompson, Director of Advanced Technology of Marketing at ATI. And ATI, of course, is one of the leader in the graphics card arena, and the other is NVIDIA. Now, of course, ATI, he talked about his family and then the development tools called, what was it called again?
RenderMonkey.
RenderMonkey. I love that name.
Yeah,
that's great. But NVIDIA has its own product line as well.
Right.
Today at GDC, we've unveiled our top-to-bottom product family of DX9 class GPUs, the GeForce FX. In November, we introduced the GeForce FX 5800 series for the high-end enthusiasts. And now, today, we introduced unveiled the rest of the family, the mainstream and the value parts, the 5600 and the 5200. And the best thing about that is now you're going to be able to play DirectX 9 games on everything from a $79 card all the way up to a $399 card. So the FX is a brand new architecture, top to bottom, whole new engineering design. The main difference between the two is that it's a piece of the chip called the CineFX engine. And the CineFX engine is the piece of the chip that will allow you to do pixel shaders beyond the 2.0 specs, vertex shaders beyond the 2.0 spec, which will in turn allow you to do these cinema type graphics and cinema type special effects that were usually only done in the movie industry. Well, now you can do them in real time on your desktop PC.
Yeah, that was Derek Perez, who is the manager of public relations at NVIDIA. And, I had Derek on the spot, and we talked about DirectX 9 with ATI, so I kind of had the lowdown on that. But I wanted to know just what are games going to look like? What are these things going to look like in the future?
I think you'll see games where people actually show emotion. They move like real people. Clothing moves and sways. Imagine playing a football game, and when you get hurt, you see pain on your face. You know, your jersey scrunches up. All of that can be done with the use of vertex and pixel shaders. On top of that, environments come alive. Trees actually look like trees, not the panels that you used to see in the good old console days, Atari console days, where it's just it's just a polygon that follows you around, and that's supposed to be a tree. Now you've got trees with depth, complexity, wood, texture on leaves. They actually have something that looks organic and real.
It's interesting because it sounds like NVIDIA and ATI, they're both doing the same kind of things. But I love this discussion from Derek Perez about what the games are doing. I mean, what we're going to be able to see, that's pretty exciting.
Yeah,
I like the idea that even in one of the top games that we play, Ghost Recon, the trees are just these weird angular things. They're not real trees. They're kind of 3D sprites, if you will, in a lot of ways.
Well, you know, it's interesting. NVIDIA was really focusing on game developers, and they had a few of them there showing some really cool games. And I had a chance to talk to the developers about, you know, NVIDIA and their tools and how they were able to do what they do. So actually, first, before we get to that, because there's a cool game that I saw that I do want to talk about, I want to get a little more – I wanted NVIDIA to tell us about their tools.
For the first time, developers have all the tools that they need to get to this level. First, you need some programmable hardware, GeForce FX. The second thing you need is an API that'll let you that'll enable new features like a DirectX 9 or OpenGL. And the third thing you need, which is really key, especially for development community, is a high-level shading language. We have our own called CG, C for Graphics. It's a programming tool, and it's what you write to that allow you to create those cinematic special effects. In combination of those three, that equals cinematic computing.
Oh, wow, I didn't realize we were over.
Sorry, yes. Now, so the development tools that are supported by NVIDIA, they're very similar to ATI, right?
Yes, very much. But you got to understand, we still have the basic hardware. And, you know, game developers and, more importantly, video card manufacturers, they promise the world every time one of these new, you know, chips come out and a new generation of hardware comes out. They'll say, you know, you don't need to knock the features down. You don't need to run at a lower resolution. This thing is so powerful, you'll be able to run your games at the highest of everything. And, of course, you know, that could be true for some generation of games. A new generation will come out, and then, of course, you'll have to bump it down again and wait for the next generation of hardware. It's a cycle. So I think that this generation may be a little more powerful, but, you know, there's some controversy. If you were to go up on the web and do some searches on ATI's Radeon 9800 Pro, and compare it to NVIDIA's GeForce FX, you'll see that there's some controversial stuff happening. The Radeon, ATI's Radeon, uses DDR1 with a 256-bit memory interface, which is capable of a raw peak bandwidth of 19.8 gigabytes a second. That's great, especially for a card that's been out for, like, you know, 8 months now.
Right.
NVIDIA's GeForce FX, which just came out, uses DDR2 memory, faster, but it only has 128-bit memory interface. So the raw peak bandwidth is 16 gigabytes a second. Now, this is the most important part of a graphics card, because when you're processing billions of polygons, you know, the more bandwidth you have, the more you can process.
And this bandwidth you're talking about is to its own memory, right?
Yeah, its own memory inside the chip.
Okay.
This is on the graphics card itself. So basically, ATI has a 24% memory bandwidth advantage, you know, and the card is maybe 6 to 8 months older.
Wow.
Of course, NVIDIA says that through optimizations and bandwidth savings and content compression, that they actually deliver closer to 20 gigabytes a second. But benchmarks are showing they compete pretty much head-to-head right now.
And the card, the Radeon's been out for quite a bit longer, right?
And there's, like I said, three flavors of the GeForce FX. The highest, though, the fan is so wide, it actually takes up the PCI slot next to the AGP. So if your machine already is maxed out on slots, you have to remove a card just to get this thing to fit.
And that means it's burning a lot of energy if it's got to be cooled down like that.
And supposedly it's making a lot of noise.
You're listening to Geek Speak. I'm Lyle Troxel. In the air room with me are geeks Sean Cleveland, John Tracy, and Miles Elam. We've been talking about the game industry. If you would like to join our discussion, you may call 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. On this week's Health Matters, Dr. Don Motika looks at menopause and three important health issues facing middle-aged women: breast cancer, heart disease, and osteoporosis. Expert doctors will join Dr. Don for a discussion. You'll also hear a balanced view of the latest findings about hormone replacement therapy. That's tomorrow at 9 on Health Matters with Dr. Don, only on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. This is Geek Speak. If you have a question or comments about computers as they relate to games, the phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. With me in the air room are geeks Miles, Sean, and John. And Miles, And Sean just came back from the GDC last week in San Jose with tons of information and interviews from the experts. Okay, Sean, you said that you saw some games that are using this newer technology. What did you see?
Well, one game is called Stalker, Oblivion Lost. We spoke with Oleg Yavorsky, the PR manager from GSC Game World. They're located in, I think it's Russia. I think their actual, where they developed this game is about 50 miles from Chernobyl.
And that's where the game takes place, is in Chernobyl area.
In Chernobyl, yeah. And, well, Oleg gives a brief explanation of just what the game is.
Our game is called Stalker, Oblivion Lost, and it's an action RPG game set in Chernobyl zone. A very murky and spooky area, full of anomalies, full of radioactivity, gravitational pits, God knows what. The player performs the role of a stalker, and this is not what it typically means, actually. It's a guy who goes illegally into the zone and picks up artifacts. And artifacts are objects with abnormal energy. According to the storyline, a second explosion happened in Chernobyl, and after this explosion, a very strange zone was created. Due to close and successful cooperation with NVIDIA, we've been able to make a good optimization for the latest GeForce FX board, and we did an optimization for DirectX 9, and just because owing to this, it allowed us to create levels with up to 2 million polygons per frame. This makes the game world looking really detailed, just as a real life, or slightly better. We have different renderers for different hardware. The game will automatically adjust to users' system, users' hardware. And the guaranteed minimum is 300,000 polygons per frame. So this level is attainable on GeForce 2 MX. So actually, yeah, the more powerful system you got, the more eye candy you have.
And something interesting that he said is that they actually build out the engine for lots of different cards. So their game, even though it's designed for the future, new stuff, can play on a GeForce 2, which is 2-3 years old.
Right. But when you do, you won't be seeing the game in all of its glory.
And how glorious is it, Sean?
Oh, I couldn't believe it. I sat there and just stared at it for a long time. It was just a huge crowd. This is the next generation. If you're into games like, Rogue Spear, Ghost Recon, Battlefield 1942... this game makes those games look like old Atari, equivalent.
You got some screenshots from their site. Oh, what is their site? Let's go ahead and let people go there.
It's www.stalker-game.com.
And even if you're not a gamer, if you're, let's say, interested in art, go and look at this, because the game industry is getting so beautiful with their games that at some point in the future, the merge between a game and possibly an interface, kind of like what Myst was when people first started playing that, where it was so amazing to see that on the computer, you're going to start seeing a category of gaming that is an art level and potentially a new field of fine art in the computers. It already is there now, but we're going to see more of that, maybe interactive art. And take a look at www.stalker-game.com. Of course, it's a very violent first-person shooter. You're set off to go kill things. And I think people, I'm not sure. So it's not exactly good for kids. But it does do some amazing things with the computer graphics. It puts you in a 3D world that you can interact with that looks stunning.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, with 300,000 polygons in a frame, they can certainly paint a pretty picture.
Now, we got a call off air. What do you see about audio and gaming, the audio industry? What do you hear in the audio realm?
I think audio is kind of making its shift from a dedicated audio card into the motherboard chipset. So you've got companies like NVIDIA. They actually do a motherboard chipset called the Enforce, and that's out right now. The Enforce 2 is out right now, and it supports full Dolby Digital, 6.2, decoding and encoding. So basically, if you take a game that supports Dolby Digital playback, like Quake 3, and you build a machine, hook it up to your home stereo system, and you play Quake 3, and you enable Dolby Digital encoding, it'll actually encode Quake 3 so that you can then break it out into 5.1 distinct channels.
Wow.
And in all its glory. So actually, I think
so, kind of full immersion sound where you have things behind you,
right,
is totally there for the game industry. It has been for a while.
So depending
really
on what you buy, you may not even want to go buy an audio card. what you already have in your motherboard.
Might do it,
yeah.
That's pretty impressive. Well, we have Sid, and I think Sid is actually going to stump us here on GeekSpeak. Sid from a car phone, welcome to GeekSpeak. We lost Sid. I'm assuming we lost him because he was on a cell phone. Well, his question, I don't know the answer to this, but DXVA support for high-definition TV. Sean, do you know? I don't even know what DXVA is.
No, I don't
know. So if somebody knows what that is or would like to participate in the show with questions or comments, please call 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And now Sid is back with us. Hello, Sid, and welcome to GeekSpeak.
No.
Let's try it one more time. Sid? No, we're not going to be talking to Sid today, I don't think. But go ahead and give us a call, 476-2800, or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877.
And Sid, if you want to email your question to geeks@geekspeak.org, we could do a judicious use of Google on it and see what happens.
I'm sure we'll be able to figure out something for you.
Yeah, but video games are moving to HDTV. The Xbox supports it. I don't know if there are any games out yet, but it does support 1080i.
I mean, you hear all this HDTV is great, blah, blah, blah. What's the real difference between a normal television and HDTV?
It's like listening to mono and stereo. It's a world of difference. It's a much higher resolution screen. I mean, if you're watching an HDTV broadcast, I was watching a football game, and you could actually see the sweat dripping off of the players' masks. You could actually, when they showed the crowd in the stands, see every individual face. It's a world of difference.
In other news with regards to games, recently saw a headline saying that Microsoft was, after DirectX 9, is halting development on the DirectX API for a while, like taking take a backseat to other work.
Why?
They've already, in talking with different video card manufacturers and the like, and game manufacturers, they've already taken it to the point where the API is a few years in the future for what is going to be coming up with hardware and software, or rather with games, applications. And so there's no real point to keep pushing it. So for the first time in a very long time, you're going to see the same API for an extended period of time just sitting there without having to have that upgrade fever.
Yeah, I've heard this rumor too. It's probably going to be a couple of years before you see DirectX 10.
Wow. So we could see a slowdown in what Microsoft supports. Do you think that's going to slow down the card manufacturers?
No, as I said, the API, it looks like it's ahead of what they're going to do.
Yeah.
Basically, the video card manufacturers said, this is where we want to go, and they've already done that. So
yeah.
Now the video card manufacturers and the game application developers are playing catch-up.
It's going to take a good year just for developers to really understand how to program to these new features anyway. And, of course, there's a lag time in releasing these games, so I can understand this.
Do you think it's ever going to get to the point where we stop upgrading, where we reach a point where it's like, wow, you know what? Our computers do everything we need as fast as we need them to do. The games look picture perfect. There's nothing left.
Because you're always going to find something else, though.
When
you start ending up past, oh, the visuals look great, the audio looks great, then you're going to start getting into areas that you wouldn't normally think for a game. You're going to see sociologists and psychologists getting into it and making the computer AI be more like a human being, which is going to take another set of CPU power. You're going to see the physics in a game get so much better.
And, you know, the physics are pretty good right now. I mean, they're getting better, and the 3D, the visuals are really good, and they're going to get amazingly well. But, yeah, I mean, at some point we'll be maxing out a lot of what we consider. But then there's also the aspect of the art side of it, which I find the most exciting. 10 years out, 15 years out, a situation in which game, all you look for is the most amazing, most amazing experience for the, you know, like a good painting. You're looking for the art of it. And that's a ways off, but that's what I'm seeing for the future.
But it seems like the hardware will be there to do that regardless. I mean, it seems like we're going to reach a point where it's so good we don't need to go on.
I think it's going to happen with some parts, but others you're going to want to upgrade. And the video card is something you might want to look at. And NVIDIA's low-end chip is going to be on $100 and supports DirectX 9, so very interesting.
And we're not there yet either way.
This is GeekSpeak. I'm Lyle Troxell. Sean Cleveland, thank you for going to the GDC and bringing back such great information.
Thank you.
Sean Cleveland is amazingly talented in PR and and product marketing. He writes articles for Consumer Focus magazine and white papers for technology as geeky as Hypertransport Protocol. Sean is a good friend and is currently looking for work. You can find out more information about Sean Cleveland at geekspeak.org. Geeks John Tracy, Sean Cleveland, and Miles Elam, thank you very much for coming in today and being with us.
Always.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.
Our producer is Maggie Cleveland. Thank you all for your participation in GeekSpeak. To those that called in, thank you. Sorry we couldn't get you on the phone. Without your input, it'd just be us talking like we did this hour, and who wants to listen to that?
Later today on This American Life, 7 days a week, Liz and Bill go out on the streets of New York with a sign that says, "Talk to me." And people do. Like they've been waiting for this, needing it.
This girl I've been going out with for 2 years just got engaged to some dude after dating him for 4 weeks.
I just lost my job. I'm just kind of like in that, you know, that state of shock.
What's talking good for anyway, today?
At 7 p.m., it's This American Life here on KUSP, Central Coast Public Radio.
This is Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz, KBDH, San Ardo, or on the web at kusp.org. I'm Lyle Troxell. GeekSpeak will be back next week with web gurus from Adobe in a discussion about website creation and scalable vector graphics. But now, stay tuned for Fine Print.